Hey Joe, I like your show. I tell everybody that's my shit. And if you got a long ride and you like getting high, maybe go and take another hit. We gonna laugh out loud, that's what it's about. Nobody ain't safe no more. And Joe stands out even in a big crowd, cause a motherfucker 6'4". Hey Joe, it's time to start the show. Up, up and away we go. Mic check and I like your flow. Everybody, here's Joe.
Hello everybody, and thank you for tuning in to another episode of the Joe Prano Podcast. I am your host, Joe Prano, and this is episode 12. First of all, I'd just like to apologize for the delay between last episode and this episode. There was a couple weeks off, and that was just due to basically me being busy, lots of things happening in Joe Prano land. Also did mix in a short vacation, and also had a guest flake on me. So a three-headed monster caused us to have a couple of weeks off, but I am excited to be back. This will be my first episode in October. I am doing a sober October, if you will, and just saying that pains me. I don't like the term sober October. I'm also not really doing a sober October. I started a little bit before October, and I'm planning on sort of going indefinitely. And the difference for me from most people is I think a lot of people do a sober October. It's very contained to the month, and it's sort of this thing where they're going to not consume any drugs or alcohol for the whole month. That is not what's behind my sober October. In fact, I did have a glass of wine with dinner tonight. I've had a drink here and there throughout the month so far. And for me, sober October is has been more about fitness. I decided recently that I wanted to get in shape. My whole life, I have had a pretty simple sort of exercise regimen. I've always just participated in sports of some kind, and that's always been enough to keep me in shape. I've always swam. I've always played basketball, played a little volleyball, surfed, whatever. There's always been something going on that sort of keeps me fit. And as I approach 40, I've noticed that all of those things just don't seem to be enough. Also, being on the road a lot more than I have been in the past, I don't really have the opportunity to, you know, surf as much as I want to or play volleyball as much as I want to. A lot of the things that I like to do to keep in shape, I don't really get to do as much when I'm working. So this month is more about having a better diet and just consuming less in terms of alcohol, because when I drink, I tend to drink a lot, you know, not a lot, but like, you know, you sit down and you have a bunch of beers while you watch football, and then you eat wings, and then you, next thing you know, you're having dessert, and it's just a snowball effect that I thought, you know, every few years I usually take a couple months off from drinking just to sort of reset, and this one, the focus was going to be to get a little bit healthier. So I know there are a lot of other podcasts out there. I know it seems like every year Rogan and Kreischer and Ari Shaffir do a Sober October thing, and it's this challenge that they're not going to use anything. And I'm certain that a lot of those guys have talked to addiction people and, you know, recovery people, and there's a million podcasts out there that you can listen to if you want to hear about, you know, getting off the booze or getting off drugs or being in recovery. And I, you know, highly recommend you go and listen to them. My Sober October month has nothing to do with any of that. It just has to do with getting fit. And so my guest today is Duffy Gaver. He is a trainer to the stars. He is the superhero maker, as I called him. He is responsible for taking actors and actresses and getting them in shape often very quickly for roles where they need to be incredibly in shape, a lot of them for superhero roles. He worked with Hemsworth to make him into Thor. He worked with Brad Pitt to turn him into Achilles in, I believe it was Troy. He worked with Chris Pratt to get him in shape for Guardians of the Galaxy. He's worked with tons and tons of actors and actresses to get them fit. And I thought, what a great person to sit down and talk to about fitness, my fitness goals, the different things that people use as excuses to stop them from doing things, you know, sort of the things you should do, the things you should avoid. Who better than somebody who literally takes people and in a matter of weeks turns them into a completely different person. He doesn't do a ton of interviews, so I was so stoked that he was willing to sit down and talk with me. He is a former Marine, turned Navy SEAL, turned stuntman, turned celeb trainer, and we sat down for about an hour at his house and just talked all things fitness and exercise. So hopefully you guys enjoy the episode. Hopefully if any of you are working on your own fitness goals, that some of the things that he talks about can be helpful to you. I know that I'm already super inspired just by our conversation to take the month that I have already set aside to getting in better shape to kick it up even another notch. So hope you guys enjoy the interview with Duffy. And please don't forget before you leave today to rate, review, and subscribe to the show. If you want to support it, go on Patreon. Go to patreon.com/Joe Prano. One of the folks who supports on Patreon actually got a question into this episode. I put a little note on Patreon the other day and asked for questions for Duffy, and one of you guys responded, and so your question is in the show. So support the show all the different ways that you can. Rate, review, subscribe, become a patron, and enjoy my sit-down with the superhero maker, Duffy Gaver. So I tried to do some research on you, as I do on all my guests, but you're pretty under the radar. There's not a lot out there about you. Randy sent me a few, articles where your name came up, and a few, there's one video that interview that I saw of you. Why is it that you sort of are under the radar for all the work you've done with so many people?
I don't see an advantage to a big like social media thing, because the people I want hiring me are all film people. And generally how I get hired is I work with one actor and then another actor sees them, and through their agents or the studio or whatnot, they find out who his trainer was. I get a phone call from that the next studio and they say, hey, are you available to train this guy? And yeah, we're off and running.
That seems in dire contrast of everybody else that's working in fitness right now, where everything is social media, pushing themselves hard, standing with a product. Is that something that you take personally, like that you're not doing what all these people are doing?
Fitness industry, I sort of view negatively as an industry, because I figure it's about 90% industry and about 10% fitness. I think most trainers that look at what I do, they think, oh, I want to go there. I want to go train celebrities. I want to go. But then you get there and you're training people. Just that's the job. You train people. You get them from point A to point B. And then it becomes, okay, how do you make more money? How do you turn this into more cash? Now you can go on social media and you can take your shirt off and work out on Instagram or whatever it is you want to do and get followers and try to hawk stuff. But I'm not a sales guy. I'm not good at it. It's not my thing. And it's not what I want to do. And I don't want to hawk protein powder for a living. And I see a ton of trainers, and good trainers, solid trainers, but they're trying to monetize their business. And what they end up doing is hawking pills and powders and some workout that's supposed to be a new workout, not like the human body's new, but they've got a new way to do it. And again, which I feel bad for the viewers, I feel bad for the consumer, because they don't, people get really fit. Some guys, they're obsessed with it. They spend all the, you know, everything about their food, their life, everything, their sleep habits. It's all about, oh, look how fit I am. Look how fit I am, which is insanely narcissistic. And then those people, once they're fit, a company comes and says, will you sell my protein powder? Sure, for money. So now you got a picture of this guy with this can of protein powder. Now, he never has eaten that protein powder, but they're like, they want you to associate his physique with that can. It's complete BS. But you're the consumer, and you look at him, and you go, okay. And then you buy that protein powder, and you go home and start mixing it into your crap. And you can't figure out why you don't look like him, because that protein powder had nothing to do with him.
I'm sure that the celebrities that you work with to get fit pay you well. I mean, they have usually pretty good salaries coming in. Studios, I'm sure, pay well as well. But you would think that even avoiding selling a product, putting yourself out there on social media, draws in people with maybe even more money who are like, wow, if he can get Brad Pitt looking like that, I'll pay anything to look like this celeb. Is that something that you're not interested in doing?
I generally don't train civilians, for lack of a better term. I have trained a couple, and it's a very weird relationship too, because they're like, oh, I want so-and-so's, I want Chris Hemsworth's trainer, I want Chris Pratt's trainer. That's a weird thing to want. You know, you should want a trainer that's going to get you in the shape you want to be in. And a lot of trainers can do that. Go find a trainer that's close to you. If you want to get fit, one of the things you have to do is make your fitness as easy as possible. So if I tell you there's an amazing gym on the other side of LA, or there's a good gym at the end of your block, what are you probably better off with? Amazing across town or pretty good 2-minute walk away? Go to the 2-minute walk away one. It'll suit you. It doesn't need to be that other one. By the same token, I had a guy from Manhattan Beach. I don't even know how he got a hold of me. And he was like, oh, I saw an article on you. I want you to, you know, I know you've trained this guy and that guy and this guy, and I want you to be my trainer. And I said, look, we can try it. I don't know why you're setting yourself up for this. I don't think it's going to work out for either of us, but I'll try it. Tried it a couple times. Finally got another guy to train him for a while. But even then, I was like, dude, the drive you're putting yourself through is ridiculous. Nobody wants that.
I'm sure there's a big difference in training somebody for life, somebody that just wants to be fit, healthy, look good, as opposed to somebody that has a goal of getting fit for a role in a certain amount of time. And that seems to be your specialty.
I'm very fortunate, because there's a timeline built into almost every project. So if somebody comes with to me with you and says that we need him to look roughly this way by this date, he's going to take his shirt off, or he's going to run naked across this grass in this scene, it's going to be 30 foot tall, and it's not going to change. You're like, so as we go through the process, I can lean on you with that and say, look, we've got 6 weeks left. You know what they're going to do. You know what they want to see. So do you want to screw this up, or do you want to, you know, move forward? So I'm fortunate in that regard. I don't have somebody that's like, well, it'd be nice, but if I don't do it, it's not that big a deal.
Right.
It's a big deal.
In the few articles that I read, it seemed like you kept referencing, you know, sort of a distaste and a distrust for the new fad, the new diet, that, you know, you would say, hey, Arnold didn't have this, and going back, this Mr. Olympia didn't have this. What is your philosophy, or is that part of your philosophy, that hey, it's, you don't need all of this stuff?
You don't. So my philosophy is that it's you. So if I can convince you that this is all well within your ability and it falls on your shoulders, I always say will, desire, and discipline. If you have them, we're good to go. It doesn't matter what equipment we have or don't have. If you don't have them, it doesn't matter how much stuff we have. It doesn't matter what nutritional plan you're on. Without will, desire, and discipline, you're nowhere. And if you have it, you're everywhere. And I'm sure, like, I was listening to one of the podcasts you were talking about, you know, athletes and Herschel Walker and such, and that really made me think about it. Like, you couldn't have stopped Herschel Walker from being Herschel Walker. Whether that was just sheer genetics, whether it was his upbringing, whether it was his competition factor with siblings or with somebody else, he was a freight train. You couldn't have stopped him. And I need to convince you of that you are that freight train. Do you know, does it make sense?
Yeah. And I'm glad you brought up Herschel Walker, because it's the legend of Herschel Walker that he has put out there. The whole is, I would just do push-ups. I would just run. I'm sure there was more to it than that, but he was sort of on your wavelength for a long time, saying it's, you know, these guys who are taking things to, you know, he played in a time of steroids where guys were able to take it and get away with it. And no, he's like, great, short-term fix. I ran a lot. I did a lot of push-ups.
Look, I don't know. I can't speak to the reality of anything, right? So let's move from Herschel to Lance Armstrong. He said, no, not me, no, not me, no, not me. Everybody else, but not me. Chances are, if you are running with the pack and everybody in the pack is doing something, there's a very real possibility that you two are doing something. It seems physiologically undoable for any one guy to be in a team sport or some sort of competitive sport like that, where everybody else around you is on the sauce and you're the one anomaly that is not, yet you are the dominant force in that game. You know, you take what you will from that.
There is no Santa Claus. That's not there.
Doesn't seem to be.
Yeah.
Since Santa Claus apparently was on the tour and was taking everything under the sun and pissing off the world.
I mean, he's getting to every house on Christmas Eve. He's on something. He's at caffeine at least.
Caffeine at least.
How did you get into doing what you do in the first place? Is this something that you had always thought you would be, be in fitness?
Not at all. Not at all. I went on a film doing stunts, and I met the actor's trainer, and we just became friends and started surfing together and whatnot. And then they said, how'd you like to train somebody? And I was really reluctant, because that was my buddy's thing. You know, you don't want to get in your buddy's job. And eventually I said, okay, sure, I'll train somebody. And I trained somebody, and then they told somebody. And next thing you know, I was training Tobey Maguire for the first Spider-Man.
And ever since then, you've worked with, I listed before the show, but every big actor, you're the superhero maker. You made Thor.
You know, it's funny. I thought about it last night, and I was like, I was in the superhero business before Marvel, because Sony made Spider-Man before Marvel made anything. So there's that.
Spider-Man was sort of the one that brought it back.
Yeah, as far as the superhero movies, they did. And it's interesting, because that physique reveal thing kind of has come with the superhero genre. There's some scene where Peter Parker is going to see himself in the mirror, and he has to have some body that sells you for the rest of the film on his abilities. And it's something I talk with my clients about all the time, is you don't need to be this totally ripped up jacked person the whole film. You just need to be it for a scene, because if they see you that way once,
right,
you can wear an overcoat for the rest of the movie. They've seen you. It's in their mind that you are that physically capable, you know, superhero.
When you get hired to train somebody, especially for a superhero-like movie, who is setting the goals for you? Is that something that's coming from the studio, say he needs to look like this, and they're showing you a picture of Thor in a comic book, or you're saying, hey, we've got to do this, or a combination, or the client themselves, the actor?
It tends to be a combination of everything. So they can come to me and say, we want him to be, okay, so for Hemsworth, we're going to put him in a cape. So you got to be pretty big to not disappear in that outfit. You know, you put a cape on a guy and suddenly his shoulders and arms look small. So you're going to have to be really big.
Otherwise, you're a magician.
You're gonna have to be a pretty big guy to stand out in that outfit. So Chris and I talked a lot about big arms, big shoulder, wide back type thing. But then there's also just what makes the male physique look good. And it's something I've talked to the actors I've worked with on. Like when I was doing Brad Pitt for Troy, we talked about the male physique a lot. And the Statue of David, the Statue of Hercules, that kind of thing. And what you'd find is that a big chest looks really odd on a guy. It just looks like a guy that goes and benches. So if you're going to play some Roman gladiator and you've got this big chest, the viewer comes in and goes, oh, wow, he looks big. Man, he looks like he probably benches something, something. You know what I mean?
Right.
Whereas if you've got large shoulders and a sort of a small chest like a Roman Greco wrestler, it's more believable that you just are this guy. There's those kind of considerations.
Right. What is it like working out with you? Or what's your approach in terms of motivating people to work out? Is it a client-by-client basis, or are you just a hard-ass?
No, I'm not a hard-ass. It's funny. I had a director that I was supposed to work with who canceled on me and then canceled on me and then canceled on me. And then I finally talked to somebody, and they said, he's worried you're going to yell at him. I don't yell at anybody. I'm there with you. The idea is we are trying to get to this goal together. The look on my face, generally my clients will tell you, is somewhere between sort of disgust and disappointment. I've had a few threaten to take a picture and make a t-shirt out of it. I'm not a cheerleader. I'm just like, I know what I know, and I'm a guide. I'm a guide, and I'm there to talk to you about what we need to get done.
What usually brings on that face? What is it about? Just a general, like, them not doing it right? Them not doing it enough?
No, more. I think it's honestly, it comes from the military background. I've seen guys.
Can you tell me about your military background? Because it's very few words out there about you, but one thing that kept coming up, and I never know what it was. Were you a Navy SEAL sniper?
I was a sniper in the Marine Corps before. So I was right out of high school. I was in the Marine Corps. I was a sniper. And then while I was in the Marines, I was overseas in Asia, and I met some SEALs on a ship, talked to them about their job, and I thought that seems like a better move. So I finished my time in the Marine Corps, went to the Navy recruiter, joined the Navy, and then ended up going to the SEAL teams.
Now, the sort of lore of the Navy SEAL is that that's the hardest thing you can do. The training for that, to get into that, like.
I was just talking to another former team guy about this.
Like, when they want somebody to be a badass in a movie, they just say, oh, he's a Navy SEAL.
They should just say, oh, he's been through divorce. There was some show on TV, and the trailer was this ex-Navy SEAL, and it says former Navy SEAL, and it says SEAL training is the hardest thing I've ever been through in my life. And I thought, man, you don't have kids, and you have not been through a divorce, buddy, because that's going to hang me. So, look, it's...
You've got the training to protect yourself.
The military training... Whether it's Marine Corps training, sniper training, or SEAL training, you see guys giving it everything they've got, and at whatever level that is, they are giving it everything. So then you go train people. So my expectation of hard work might be a little higher than your expectation of hard work. And when you say that's all I've got, I think you've got quite a bit more. And this goes back to, like, look, SEAL training, they're very big on the idea that you have much more in you than you think you have, and we're going to show you. And they do. So I think that, you know, over kind of like influences my mindset when I'm training my actors.
So, I mean, you're a Marine, which for a lot of people is like, yeah, I'm a pretty badass guy, you know, and then you go and you become a SEAL, and now you're training. It's almost the opposite end of the spectrum. These are people who are actors. So when you, like, is there any sort of thought when you go into these situations that, hey, like, this guy's not going to meet the hard work that I put into this?
No,
because
I think there's, and I've mentioned this before in other situations. There is one of the big things about SEAL training is the attrition rate. So you start with like 100 and something guys, and you end up finishing with 20 guys or 15 guys. I think there was a class that graduated no guys. So you see this horrendous attrition rate. And I've talked to people about this. Like, acting has an attrition rate that's similar to that. There's a lot of people that want to be actors, but they don't even bother. And there's a lot of people that want to be actors that start and quit. And a lot of people that come to LA and they start and then they quit and they become car dealers or whatever it is that, you know, goes on.
Podcasters.
So there is, by the time Marvel or one of the major studios calls me and says, we've got this guy, he has been through quite a litmus test of what he is and his commitment to his craft and so on. And Marvel in particular is very, very smart about who they hire. It's funny, I had a conversation with Kenneth Branagh when I first started working with Hemsworth on Thor, and he talked about what a great guy Chris was, just the fact that he was so polite and such a gentleman, and Branagh was so impressed with him just as a guy, because they know they're going to go off for a year or two and be on a project with these people, so you don't want to hire some jerk.
Right.
Some difficult prima donna who, you know what I mean?
Is there anybody that you have encountered? You don't have to name names, but where you showed
nope,
up and you're
absolutely
like, this is not
going
to work?
Can't, no.
Or they didn't give you, I mean, the disgust face, it sounds
No. Look, my disgust face is more of like, come on, I want it a little more. Let's get to it. I've definitely, when a producer hires me to train somebody, I'm beholden to that producer and that project. If you're the actor and, you know, and look, I have these conversations about, if you want to look amazing, you've got to train amazing, you got to eat amazing, you got to sleep amazing. That means I don't want to hear about you out partying on the weekends because you're this young badass actor and you're enjoying sort of the fruits of your labor. For this project, you need to like be on this project and be on the program. I've certainly had situations where I'm like, look, your guy is not on, so you may want to have a conversation with him. And they do, and they get straightened out and they get back into the program. And
conversely, easier to name names for, was there anybody that you were like, we'll see what happens, and they blew you away, like, I can't believe how hard this guy works?
A lot of them, honestly, because look, most people that are really into getting fit, they don't do much else, to be quite honest. Like, so total fitness heads eat, live, breathe fitness. They live at gyms, they carry around Tupperware, they, you know what I mean? They're sort of, it'll fairly boring life other than look at how fit I am. Whereas most of the people I work with, they run product, they have their own production companies. They're post on one project, they're pre on one project, they're in the middle of editing something, they're doing this, they're doing that, and they're getting in shape for this other thing.
Right.
So I've definitely learned a lot about trying to juggle multiple projects and things from the, you know, people I've worked for.
There is, I feel like, with a lot of people who see these stars turn superheroes that sit at home and go, well, yeah, if I had a guy whose only job it was to make me fit, got me up in the morning. Is there, like you're saying, that this is all that they're doing at a certain point is training for this role. Is there truth to that? That hey, yeah, you're not going to be a superhero if you are an accountant 40 hours a week and you can just do this on nights and weekends.
I read this article. There was this guy, a Santa Monica local. It was in the Santa Monica paper. And he was 40 pounds overweight and he had no cash. And one day he just made the decision he was going to go down to the rings at Muscle Beach and start working out with those guys. And he dropped like 40 pounds, got super ripped. All he was doing was going to the rings and hanging out with the gymnastic people. So what I would say to you is you can either make the decision to get fit or you can't. And that's it. And whether you work with me, you don't work with me, whether you work with a trainer or you just pick up a book or it's, I spend a ton of time talking to my clients about this. It's not that complicated. If you start getting on the internet and you start reading this person's book and that person's book and you talk to this person and that person, and this is a pet peeve I have. So if I come to you and I tell you everything you've known about fitness before me is wrong, but mine's right. In the back of your mind somewhere, you know that somebody else is going to come along and go, well, everything Duff told you is wrong. Mine's right. Because it's become just some marketing ploy to get your attention and your money. That's where I go to this thing of like, all these people that famous people, Larry Scott, Miss First Mr. Olympia, Roger Bannister, first 4 minute mile. There was another first guy that won the Tour de France, first guy that won the World's Strongest Man contest. All these companies, like Nike wasn't around when Roger Bannister ran a 4 minute mile. Hammer Strength wasn't around when Larry Scott was Mr. Olympia. So are these companies, are these products necessary? No, not at all. Not at all. Roger Bannister ran that in like the worst shoes. I think actually he ran it in one of his shoes and he lost a shoe. So it was his buddy's shoe, but he had to wear an extra sock because that didn't fit. But he still ran the 4 minute mile because he decided on that day he was going to run the 4 minute mile. So if you
you're saying when I don't run because my comfy underwear is in the laundry, that's a bad excuse?
Yeah, that's weak. That would rate the somewhere between disappointment and total disgust look. Now you know where that is applicable.
Well, the reason I wanted to sit down with you now is because I'm currently trying to, you know, make a effort to change my fitness. With October, you know, everybody does Sober October.
Right.
And I drink a fair amount, but I'm not doing Sober October for the purpose of like, oh, I'll show people I can make it a month without drinking. I said, I want to get back into shape like I've been before. I'm getting older. I'm almost 40. And it just seems like for me, what's always worked for me, which is I don't really have much of a regimen besides I surf, I swim laps, I play basketball. I just stay active. And that's always sort of worked. And now I'm doing that. And I'm losing ground, and I'm like, wow, what is – I think I need to really take a look at things and reset, say, don't drink for the month, go extra hard. What's your advice for people that are facing what I'm facing, which is it's always been this level, and now it seems like I can't keep up with it anymore?
So just in that – look, as you age – obviously different body, right? So yeah, of course, the stuff that worked at 20 doesn't work at 40, doesn't work at 50. You got to rethink your game. You got to be a little more disciplined about, you know, the calorie intake, that kind of stuff. For you, the first thing that comes to mind, you like to surf, great. You like to swim laps, also great, love it. What else was it?
Just play basketball.
Play
just
some basketball.
Run, you know.
Basketball, incredibly punishing on your knees. Be aware of that. So what comes to mind is the range of motion that you go through is fairly limited. So you're not doing any deep squatting. Nowhere in there is deep squatting. There's a bunch of stuff that's not getting used the way it could. So I would take you through, I would say, why don't we add 1 day or 2 days a week of a weight workout? And this isn't like, I'm going to lift all the weight in the gym. This is some light lifting going through a broader range of motion. It's going to make your life better. It's going to make it like, look, you can run and you will live till the end of your days, but you will be scared to death of staircases because your range of motion will be so bad that as you get older, you're going to trip, fall, break a hip and think, oh my God, how did I get here? You understand? Mm-hmm. So I need you to go through a much broader range of motion. And also as you age, your muscles going away. You need to fight that. You need to lift weights so those muscles have a reason to stay. And the stuff you're doing is not necessarily a reason for them to stay. That makes sense?
Yeah.
There's this thing. If you were in a hospital bed, I could feed you steak all day long, right? Your muscles will just go away. You'll waste away because the steak, the protein has no reason to apply. But if we get you into a gym and you do a full body workout twice a week, now all that protein you do have in your diet has a reason to come in and rebuild that muscle tissue and keep some size on you.
Got it.
That would be the thing that I would do for you. As far as the drinking goes, this is an interesting one.
Because for me, the sober October thing is football's here. I sit down on Sunday. It's 10 a.m. I'm drinking light beer, but it's still, you know, it. Next thing I know, there's 15 of them. I've had some wings, and it's like I'm not 25 anymore.
No, you're not. 25, what are you doing drinking beer? Yeah. So, it's a funny thing because I know a lot of people around me that are sober now, just for a multitude of reasons. And as you know, it has to do with the people around me are getting older. People around me are thinking that it's stupid to wake up hungover.
Yeah.
I had a friend that way back in the day that he didn't seem to be able to have any fun unless there was some sort of something involved, right? Some booze, some drugs, something. And one night I remember turning to him and saying, what would you be like if you had 5 drinks in you right now? And he started acting like that. And he was sober, but he was having the best time of his life. And I was like, it doesn't need to be around necessarily. And I think they sell you the booze with this romanticized idea that, you know, beer and football go together, right? Beer and baseball go together. They don't. That's a marketing thing. That's them putting beers in people's hands at football stadiums, and you know what I mean?
Yeah.
If you're a real man's man, you're damn near a lumberjack, and you drink whiskey and you drink it in the woods by campfire. I don't know what the fuck that is. I don't know anybody like that. So it's a marketing ploy to get your money into a whiskey maker's pocket.
Right.
Do
you drink at all?
I do. Less and less. And it may be going in the direction of less and less and not at all. A drink with dinner type of thing or whatnot, but it's certainly becoming less and less attractive. And the more you see it on your friends that are older, it's even, you know, less attractive.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It seems like to me, the big question, if you're not being like, I'm fitness guy, is how do you do it and still enjoy certain aspects of life that you like? I like to have a donut every once in a while. I like to have
So I would say then set it up on a reward system. So give yourself whether you stand naked in front of a mirror and you go, okay, if I lose this donut, or you may get on the scale and I go, well, I weigh this much. If I can get down to this much, I get a donut.
Mm-hmm.
You have to set some sort of structure that puts things out of your reach. Because if you've got donuts on your counter and you've got stuff in it, you're going to eat it. If you got a fridge full of ice cream, you're going to go eat it. That would be a suggestion I would have, is if you're going to have that, make it really limited and put it way out there on the horizon so you have to work for it.
What is your advice for people who are discouraged, that they're out there and they're saying like, I could get in shape, but now I've sort of missed my window. Like the people are just, they don't know where to start. How do you inspire those folks?
I don't. Not everybody's supposed to be fit. It's not supposed to work out for everybody. Some people don't have the drive to do it. Some people don't have the discipline to do it. Some people are never going to do it. And
You're hired.
I don't mind. No, it's weird. I don't mind. Friends ask me little fitness questions. I don't mind. You know, sure. And I had a friend of mine. I was out with some friends, and we came back to my place real quick. And this guy Jimmy, He's a professional singer. And he said, and he was a little overweight, and he said, what should I do? And I wrote down a quick little diet, and I wrote a quick little workout on a cocktail napkin type thing, and I handed it to him. 6 months later, calls me up. He dropped 30 pounds. He was in the best shape of his life. And that is so rare because he had no investment. He wasn't paying me. It was a quick conversation. And most people don't take that and run with it. If you don't make somebody pay up and, you know, really invest, it's a throwaway conversation, you know, like, hey, I want to be an astronaut, right. Whatever. I want to be fit. You want to be fit. Have another burger. Have another beer. I want to get fit. I can't tell you how many people in a bar will tell you about the fitness they're about to achieve.
Right. The book they're about to write.
Yeah. Some people just aren't going to.
Yeah.
And if you're not going to, cool. Be cool with it. If this whole thing's unattractive, quit pretending it's not. If the idea of eating chicken, broccoli, and brown rice, or working out 5 days a week, or not drinking, if that's just hideous to you, don't. Out of shape. Be okay with it.
I think, you know, what you talked about is people, like, he made no investment. A lot of people, I think, sit there and they go, okay, I don't want to make an investment. I'm not trying to change my life. I'm not trying to hire a trainer to work out 6 days a week. I'm going to go on the internet and I'm going to look stuff up. And the next thing you know, 6 hours later, all you know is that you're not supposed to eat half the day and keto is something.
Okay.
And you're lost in a world of how, you know what? And you're like, you know what? Maybe I'll just be fat.
Okay. So if I put two plates in front of you, one of them's got a pile of donuts and one's got like a chicken breast and some broccoli.
Mm-hmm.
What are you supposed to eat?
Pretty sure the chicken breast.
So you're a nutritional wizard.
Yeah.
Okay. Before keto, before this diet, before the South Beach, everybody knew basically what you should and should not eat. Are you better off with chicken and vegetables for lunch? Or are you better off with a burger and fries for lunch? If you're trying to get fit, you're going to have to go in the direction of the clean eating. That's it. It doesn't have to be much more complicated than that. There's a great thing, breakfast like a king, lunch like a prince, dinner like a pauper. It's a pretty good rule. Pretty good rule.
That is a good rule.
Don't need to eat that much to go to bed. You're not going to do much.
See, this is the kind of stuff I'm talking about because there are some things that you hear your whole life.
Hang on. See, this is the point. You know this stuff I'm talking about. And this is where I get like this bone to pick with the fitness industry. They like to make it seem so complex. It is the NASA center of dieting and stuff. And you couldn't possibly do this without our knowledge, without our books, without our internet, without trainer and this and that. And the truth of it is, you know this. Your parents knew this. Your grandparents knew this. You know, if your great-great-grandmother saw you eating piles of donuts each day, she'd slap you in the back of the head and tell you you're going to be a fat ass. Knock it off. Like, it's not that complicated.
I'm Italian. She'd probably tell me I was too skinny and that
I
should have more.
I got that grandma. Here, put some more butter on that bread. But you know what I mean. It's not that complicated.
But it's interesting that you say that because I was just, I go on the road, and that's a difficult place also to stay fit and stay, like, you don't know, you're in some shit Midwest town or somewhere ever, and there's not a whole lot of healthy options. You've got fast food. But I was on the road recently with two guys who are focused on fitness, and they are wanting, they're guys who are like really doing this. And I'm like, hey, I've got a plan. Get up, have a nice breakfast. We're all going to go for a surf. That'll burn that off. We'll do this. And they're like, oh, we don't eat until 1 p.m. or something like that. I'm like, what? Am I lost? Isn't breakfast still the most important meal of the day?
Yeah, there's some people that are going down that road. Try it. Go with them for a while. Look, it used to be this complicated. You go into a gym as a young kid and you see some guy that's got like big shoulders. You go over and go, hey man, how'd you get your shoulders so big? And he tells you. And then you do it. And the next thing you know, you got bigger shoulders.
Yeah.
You go over to the guy in the gym, it's all ripped up, and you go, hey man, what do you eat? And he tells you, and you go home and you eat like that and you get lean. It's if you got friends that are mad into fitness and they look good, if you think this is working for them, follow him for a while.
Mm-hmm.
Go, hey, Bob, that thing you were talking about. Can you tell me about it? And then follow them. They're on the road. They're apparently doing the same lifestyle you are, and they're making it work. Give it a shot. Do it for a couple of months. If it doesn't work, try something else.
Obviously, you are very, you work with a small group of people. Not anybody can come up to you. You're not on the internet. People can't find you and hire you. How would one pick a trainer? Obviously, they can't work with you. What's your advice for somebody that is like, I want somebody to work at with and to train me? Where should they start?
I don't want to give advice and then have it go bad.
Whoever's got the protein.
No. So look, what town are you from?
I'm from just north of New York City, Westchester.
So you're in Westchester. You're a guy living in Westchester. I'd go to the local gym, find a trainer. Go, hey, you got a trainer? Or can you suggest a trainer? They go, yeah, this guy. And the guy's just, yeah, you're like, I would not want that physique. Don't listen to him. Go to somebody else. How about that trainer over there? He's fit as all get out. And work with him. But don't do this. Don't hire the trainer and then start going, hey, I read this article. Hey, I saw this. Hey, my buddy said this. Hey, you got it. This is again, another pet peeve. You are better off with a half-assed plan that's done with 100% conviction than you are with the greatest plan on earth done half-assed. If you're second-guessing yourself the not eating till 1 o'clock, do it. And don't kind of do it. Do it. Get with your buddy, find out what the whole nuts and bolts of that is, and copy them. See how it goes. Because if you half-ass that, you're going to be like, I don't get it. It's not working. No, it's not working because you're not doing it. So if you're going to hire a trainer, listen to the trainer until they seem like they're total nut job, and then go find another trainer. Because there's plenty of trainers.
Let's go back to some of the people that you've worked with, some of the examples that are out there that people can say, this guy knows what he's talking about. You worked with Chris Pratt, who's sort of a famous body change. He wasn't just a handsome actor turned superhero. It was like a world's difference. For somebody to make that kind of change, like how much did you guys work out in terms of days a week, hours a day? What kind of things is he doing?
Most people don't have more than an hour in them. And you can see it when you're training anybody. Like if I was training you, even if we were well into like, say, the second or third month, as the end of the hour comes along, I don't even have to look at the clock. I can see the way you're acting, how your attention is on the things we're doing. You're going to start looking around like you're trying to figure out where the clock is, like you're trying to remember where your phone is because this next thing's coming up. That's just how people work. Unless they're doing some sort of endurance program, which I've gotten people, triathlon training and such. Chris was working out 5 to 6 days a week. Chris was working out about an hour, maybe an hour and change on some days. Again, he was your guy. He just turned into this bull that you couldn't stop him. If you'd watched him work out, you'd be like, oh my God, dude. Like he was coming in there. In the gym we were using, which is in Hollywood, if you walked into that room, you'd just go, who's that guy? And you don't have to look at his face. You just go, who is that guy? Because that guy's killing himself right now. He's over there standing in a puddle of sweat. And the rest of the gym looks like they're kind of working out, but there's one dude in the corner that is killing it. And he did that all the time. To the point where he's one of those guys that you had to say, why don't you take a day off? Why don't you go chill for a day? And again, this sort of, the cream rises to the top, the actors I get, I'm very, very lucky in that regard. They are there to do it. There's no question that, if Marvel calls me, somebody's, acting life is about to change drastically most of the time. They're about to go from being, somebody who is maybe had a couple of secondary roles to somebody who's got, you know, can be starring in a $200 million film.
Who has toys that look like them?
Who has an action figure of himself or two or whatever. Cereal box. So it's, you know, so there's that.
What's your weekly regimen? What do you do to... You're the guy with the disgust face. So what's going on at home?
I would have that disgust face for myself at this present moment. Nah. If the last couple of weeks, not much. That just has to do with parenting and whatnot. Generally, I've been going to jiu-jitsu more and working out less. I like the gym thing, other than maintenance, because I've been doing it for so long, and I find going to the gym to be fairly relaxing, go get, you know, my head right. And the same with jiu-jitsu. I like that. And jiu-jitsu is newer in my life. I've only been there for a couple of years. So it's something where I am in a constant state of learning, whereas going to the gym is sort of repetitive for me at this point. Does that make sense?
Yeah, no, absolutely. I think, you know, just to, you know, from my personal experience, I've always struggled. Swimming is the only thing that I've ever been able to do where I'm just going, I'm here to do this and I'm just going to do it for an hour and I'm going to swim. I struggle to run. I struggle to even go to the gym because I'm like, I know obviously the goal is feel better, be stronger, but I need the distraction of doing something, achieving something. Even and when I've done, you know, jiu-jitsu or I've done that kind of thing, it's like, okay, at least I'm learning how to do this. I'm learning how to.
So I know the kind of stuff you're talking about. So if you were to go to a gym, and there's a lot of gyms like this right now, more boot campy sort of stuff, where you would still get the kind of stuff I'm talking about, the range of motion and the weight resistance so that you hold muscle mass. But they'll have particular workouts that are more like a goal, like as opposed, you know, like, oh, I'm going to go swim 1500 meters. I got it in my mind that I want to do it in this amount of time, or I'm going to go do laps and I'm going to, you know, hundreds, whatever. You could go to that kind of a gym, like an Orange Theory comes to mind, where you can be chasing a clock. You can be chasing your workouts and be a little self-competitive, which might hold your interest more than just walking into a, you know, standard gym and just, okay, I'm going to do back, I'm going to do chest, I'm going to do this.
Got it. So I know you said that you're doing sort of the jiu-jitsu thing, working out a little less. I know Randy told me motorcycle racing is your passion. What's that entail?
All the money you got. Right when I'm going to, Eric Bana, I'm going to blame him for this wholeheartedly, and I hope he hears this. When we were on Troy, he talked about going to the motorcycle track. He's a big Ducati guy, and he'd go to the tracks, and he likes race cars and motorcycles. And then I'd come back from that trip saying, oh, I think I'm going to buy a motorcycle, and Brad as well. So we started going to the track, and then just a bunch of friends. The next thing you know, that is my thing, and I spend a ridiculous amount of money on motorcycle parts and going to racetracks and chasing my friends around and stuff like that.
And is that just an extension of the person that you've always been, where you're it seems like you're a guy that just is always going to take it to the next level? Is that motorcycle racing, pretty, you go pretty fast, pretty dangerous, is that your...
I think I like it because the thing that comes to mind, that's an odd one. The first time in the teams where we actually went on a live op, everything gets very focused. Like it almost catches you off guard, the intensity of it all, the focus that comes into yourself. And there's just not that many times where it all gets like that. And for me, the when you're, you know, buzzing around the track at 190 miles an hour or whatever, it's that. You can't possibly be thinking about, oh, shit, those taxes. And jiu-jitsu is like that for me, too. I mean, it's, you know, you get trapped under 300-pound poly, and you're certainly, nothing else is on your mind. It's it's that thing when it takes every bit of focus you've got to just do the thing that's directly in front of you. And I think I really enjoy the simplicity of that.
I know you talked before about the guy who sort of just went down to the rings. I think another thing that I see a lot from people and hear a lot is the, and again, these are just excuses, but you're the motivator, you're the trainer, so you can sort of squash these myths. A big excuse that you hear from people is, I can't afford to do jiu-jitsu 3 days a week and then have a trainer and then do this. What is your advice for training on a budget?
Pick one. So, I'm big on what you say to yourself. And I talk to clients about this all the time. So if you were to come to me or some guy and say, hey, I got your name, blah, blah, blah. Hey, I can't. I go, dude, stop right there. You're entering this conversation, getting in your way. So you like open the door and then right away you close the door on the idea. So it's very important what you say to yourself. And I do this with clients. Like, they'll come in and I'll say, I had like this big day planned. They're like, I can't do that today. And sure enough, 15 minutes into it, not only are they doing it, but they're beating the numbers I had in mind. And I tell them, I go, look, not only could you, not only can you, you're going way past my expectations. So you got to stop with this conversation in your head of what you cannot do and what you are incapable of. So if you come to me and you say, I can't afford a trainer, the internet is free. So find somebody that you like and read their stuff, or buy an old, Arnold wrote this great book about, it's Education of a Bodybuilder, I think. It's his first book. It's not the huge encyclopedia size one. It's a small one. I think Bill Dobbins comes to mind, who wrote it with him. It's a fine book. It's the book I read when I was 15 years old and I started going to the gym. And then I started asking guys, like I said, that were bigger than I was or stronger than I was, hey, how'd you do that? And they tell you.
Have you thought of writing a book or putting out anything in so that people can say, hey, this is...
I am supposed to be writing a book right now. Actually, this is probably a good excuse to not be writing. I have the thing I wrestle with writing a book is, again, that the bulk of the industry has this sort of war path of making it seem so complex. Like there's my way to build your shoulders as if it never existed before, even though the Mr. Olympia contest has been around for eons and every other bodybuilding contest and fitness contest. My book would probably be closer to a pamphlet, but that's not what they want. They wanted the full-size book. But right. It's so simple. Like the same basic workout that built the first Mr. Olympia's still works. Like there's this old saying that you don't train the muscle, you train the joint. So the muscle that closes, that takes your forearm and closes it to your upper arm is your bicep. So if you just do that with bigger and bigger weight all the time, you end up with bigger and bigger biceps. It's so simple. But the industry has a vested interest in making it seem so complicated that you have to just keep shelling out money for the new idea and the new shit and the new powder. Otherwise, you couldn't possibly survive or achieve your goals. And it's not true. And that's the when I do get off my ass and finish the book, that would be my hope is that I...
Do you want me to be your book trainer?
You
just
could.
Just stand
you
with
could.
Disgust face?
You could. No, but
really,
it would,
one
I would
page.
Say, I would say
that's all you got.
That my hope would be at the end of it, you would realize just how much you are in charge of this, how much you are in control of it, how much the grocery store is probably the furthest you have to go for nutritional supplements. That it really has to do with you putting a boot in your own ass and doing it.
Well, and I think there's a lot of information out there, like you said, that everybody is putting something out. This is the way you get fit. This is the way you get big. This is the way you get shoulders. How about, the information that's out there said, the way you thought you were supposed to do it is why everybody's shoulders hurt now. And the way you thought you were supposed to run is why everybody's got shin splints. What about like the idea of how to sift through what you should and shouldn't listen to?
It's tough. And again, that is the difficulty of the industry. I say it's about 90% industry and about 10% fitness. I would say find one of your friends that are into it and talk to them. I mean, that's as simple as it gets, right? So if you're trying to write a book and you happen to have a friend that's written a book, go talk to him. Say, how does this work? If you're a parent and you have a friend that seems to be an amazing parent, go hit them up. Hey, dude, how do you deal with this? And if that advice seems to go bad on you, go look for, you know, someone else like that. It's not complicated. Try to simplify it for yourself. Try to get that into your mindset that just, I'm going to make this as simple as I possibly can make it for myself. I'm going to choose the closest gym, the easiest avenue, the trainer that's right down the street, the trainer that seems to have his act together, that he seems to be fit and can convey information easily. I've met, obviously, a lot of trainers. I've met trainers that were in insanely good shape but could not impart information on you to save their hide. I've met trainers that were completely out of shape, that were libraries of incredible information. But I've met trainers that are so busy trying to make you, impress you with their knowledge that you're just lost and alone. There are people out there that were amazing trainers that now have just decided, hey, I'm just going to hawk shit. I'm going to sell training. I'm going to sell different. I'm going to make you a trainer in my system. It'll end up costing you $5,000 and you can whatever. The training business is tough. If you're not lucky enough, like me, I am crazy lucky that I make plenty of money training people. I don't need to sell protein powder. I wouldn't want to. I'd be bummed out if it got to that.
Do you ever face any sort of people that are, you know, not trusting that you're the guy? Did you ever walk in and somebody goes, "What, this guy, I know how to work out," or
Chris
this
Hemsworth,
guy?
For sure. Day one. He'd tell you the story. He was working with a trainer. We got in contact with each other through a mutual friend. So I talked to him on the phone. He said, "Do you want to come out to Detroit?" I said, "Sure." I went out to Detroit. So I had this situation where he was working with somebody and I had to be this third party and come in and see what they were doing and then, you know, give my information on it. So I went and worked with him and the trainer that he was working with. So he, you know, "Okay, let's see what you do." And he's working out and I said, "That looks good. That looks good." And he said, I thought, "What the hell is this guy doing here? Why did I have him come out here?" But in the end, I just had, you know, I got to be polite to the other trainer and see what he's doing. And, you know, I can talk afterwards about what to do differently, but it does no good. This is, again, one of the things that trainers typically do that screw other trainers over and screw themselves over is if I tell you, "Oh, that stuff that your trainer has been doing, that's crap." Because I want you to think little of him. I want you to think great of me. That does nobody any good. It makes you feel like you were a fool for trusting the other guy. It makes you feel probably foolish to trust me because somebody else could probably come along and say, "Oh, what he said's crap." So what I would say is, I get why he was probably making those decisions. I'd like to take it in a different direction. I'd like to try this on you and see how you adapt to that. Because this thing that the fitness industry has of poo-pooing the other stuff, it brings the whole industry lower, if that seems like a reasonable explanation.
Well, you brought up Hemsworth. Obviously, he's an example of a guy who has to get into this shape every so often now because they're not going to stop making these movies as long as these movies keep making all of the money. So how in advance of shooting do you have to get back on with working with somebody to go, "Okay, we need to get you back to where you were"?
It depends. It depends on the person and the project. Because you take a, like, let's say I got you and you've gotten into this amazing shape for some superhero movie. Maybe your next project, they say, "Hey, look, we want you to put 50 pounds on. We want you out of shape." Well, that's a very different starting spot than, you know, the next time you got to be in hero shape. Whereas, say you do a hero movie and the next thing you're going to do some movie where that you're going to be, we just want you to drop a couple of pounds because we're going to put you in some really nice suits. You can keep your physique, drop a few pounds of muscle, and the next time we got to get you in shape, we just got to bulk you up a tiny bit. There's so many variables involved. I don't know. It's so project specific and person specific.
Yeah. I got to get in the training people to put on 50 pounds for a role game. That could be
no, I don't suggest it. I know.
Yeah, are there people who that's their job?
It's a horrible thing to do to your body. And I was supposed to work with an actor. I was actually going to fly to Dubai. I had my bags packed, ticket in hand. And the production called me up and said, hey, it's all canceled. Because it was an actor that put on a lot of weight for a role. And during some scene, he got thrown around and gotten hurt. So a guy like you who's, you know, surfing, he's sort of the same kind of guy, a little tennis, a little basketball, a little surfing, like, you know, that guy. And then all of a sudden his body, he's never been a heavy guy. So his body, his tendons, his ligaments, his structure isn't ready to carry an extra 50 pounds or 60 right. pounds of fat. And it wrecked him. And it took a long time for him to get that weight off. And I don't think he's ever really recovered fully from that. And it's a very, very bad thing to do to your body. Very tough thing.
What's the typical, I mean, I'm sure it's different on every production, but how do you even get started with somebody? Is it typically the actor themselves that hire you, the studio, are you finding people, or is it just word of, like, somebody suggesting you? And then, like, again, is it everything different? Or are you traveling to people? Or are they traveling to you?
It happens all kinds of different ways. I've had actors call me out of the blue. I've had producers get in touch with me and say, you know, are you available? I have an actor, and then they get me in touch. I've had directors that have gotten in touch with me and said, I'm working on this project. Can you work on it? It comes from all kinds of different angles. I've been working on a project with an actor, and the other actor on the project sees what's going on and says, hey, can I work with you too?
What's the life of a celebrity trainer like? Are you going around the world? Are you on set? Do you work out with people while they're shooting? Is it mostly pre-production?
For the first 12 years of it, yeah, I was traveling a good chunk of the year. It's pretty awesome. No lie. I mean, it's funny. You're sitting there at the Four Seasons in Maui thinking this is okay. Or you're on a G5 headed for Europe. And like, it's your dude. Who knew? Who knew? But I have a son now, and I don't really want to miss him growing up. He's going to do that once. So I don't travel much anymore. There's very few guys that can, you know, some of the guys I work for, they can still say, hey, can you come out for a week? So they have that kind of clout that they can say, I want my guy to come out to Europe for a week and I can do that, but I can't be out of town for months on end. But now I've got guys that I work with that will go and they'll go do that kind of stuff.
Besides the, like you said, not wanting to travel, are there people that you've turned down or situations that you say, nah, this isn't for me?
One time I had a studio call me and they had an actress that was pregnant and they wanted her to lose a bunch of weight. And I said, that's not my thing. You go talk to somebody else. That sounds like a bad idea. So they went and found somebody else, I would imagine.
I saw that you also trained Scarlett Johansson for the Marvel movies as well. Is it easier to train men, women? It's all the personality.
It's funny. I was just... a guy that works with me, Brendan, he's had been training Scarlett a lot more recently. And we were just talking about it. Like, she's easy to train. She works out very hard. She's one of those people. She's been through the litmus test. She's where she is for good reason. She kicks ass in training. When we were at Albuquerque, she would just show up crack of dawn, big long runs, crush the workouts. She's disciplined. She gives it all. And, you know, she's like, they pick good people. They pick dedicated people.
Have you ever had an actor who said, I want to get fit for this? And you're like, what? Like, why are you doing that? Like, is a role where you say, you don't need to be jacked for this?
No. We talk about the different type of physique you would want for something. But no, I would never. No, they certainly, look, you're there. They have an idea for their character, and you are there to help them achieve their idea. You know, whether it's, you know, Jared Leto for the Joker or whatever it is, they have their, you know, some come and they're very clear on what they want to do, and you roadmap it out for them. Some come and they are less clear on it, and they like want some input on it. And some come with notes from a director and say, hey, this is what they think. What do you think? It's I think, like all good film stuff, it's sort of a multiple ideas pushing in one direction.
Because this is, I think, such a popular topic, fitness and how to get in shape. I did something for this episode that I hadn't done before because I knew a lot of the people who listen to the show would have questions. I put out to my Patreon subscribers, if anybody had a great question, that I would open it up. So we got one really good one. Sinjin Dees asked, during years of training, what's the most significant injury or setback someone has incurred, and how were you able to help them overcome and reach their goal?
Let's see, injury. I've had different actors that have come to me with pre-existing injuries, and we certainly rehab them and work around them. But this is a big consideration as far as training actors for films, not to injure anybody and to make sure nobody gets injured. As a matter of fact, there was a project where a guy that was working for me was on with as well as a trainer that was working with different actors, and they had a problem with that other trainer because he was pushing actors so hard. He had this very competitive sort of thing going on, and they were getting hurt. And they were like, I don't want to train with that guy. So my guy was taking over a lot of that work. You got to get your ego out of this. There's a $200 million project that is moving forward. And, you know, I don't know what a day of shooting can cost you $1 million if your actor can't do it because they're injured because you were an idiot in the gym. So it's not injuring people is a very, very big deal. So I haven't had anybody, you know, other than coming to me with pre-existing shoulders or knee injuries or something. And we just, you know, you take that into account like you would with anybody, and you can do rehab stuff, you know.
Well, thank you for sitting down with me. Before I let you go, because you're talking about, you got to work on this book, and I want you to give me, like, give me your intro statement. Give me, like, if somebody's, they've listened to this episode, they're ready to turn their life around, they want to get fit, you know, give me the brief. What's your first?
Do you really want to do this? That would be my first question. Just a lot of people want to do a lot of stuff and they don't really want to do it. They don't want to do anything in that direction. They want to talk about it. So I would ask them, are you just talking, or do you really want to get fit? And if they say, no, I really want to get fit, I say, great, then let's talk about that. Let's talk about what you're going to do to that. And like your time commitment, your will, desire, and discipline. Check in on those. Because if you bring that to any trainer that's worth a shit, you will probably get pretty close to what you want. You got to be realistic. I mean, look, I've trained a woman at one time, and I said, why don't you bring me in a picture of what you want to look like? And when a 45-year-old woman brings you a picture of basically a 15-year-old model, you got to kind of reset what the expectations are. So, and again, you got to be realistic what you can do. So if you're an accountant and you work these long hours and you keep these bad hours, but you say, oh, I want to look like so-and-so from some superhero movie, you may be shooting a little high. But you certainly, you can get in the best shape of your life. Does that make sense? Mm-hmm. You can, well within your lifestyle, you can get into a better shape, a better version of what you got going on.
Well, before we go, this one I'm just going to tell you is straight from Randy. She's giving me the card. We're going to read it word for word because she's just obviously got one here. Ask you what you call shirtless people working out on social media.
Oh, that's right. So I had said that I think Letterman had had David Letterman had had his revenge on the world because he now has the people are the stupid pet tricks. So yeah, it's just there are people out there that can do amazing physical things, but the idea of just I heard something the other day that, like, the internet was originally there just for pictures of puppies and cats and whatnot doing stupid things, but now it's us. It's pictures of people doing stupid things, and we are the fools. We are the stupid pet tricks. Yeah.
I just want to get in shape enough to take a picture of myself that I would put on social media if I were a douchebag. But then I don't post it.
If you were to douchebag it up. I think if you can get your head straight on what you really want to achieve and you can say, okay, I am going to put the donuts. I'm going to put the 10 o'clock fucking beer, football excuse, whatever. If you can put that aside and you can say, look, I want to clear. I tell a lot of people this. There's three roads you can go down. There's the Audubon. That is, you listen to everything I say. You eat the way I tell you to eat. You sleep good. You don't fuck around. There's no booze. There's no nothing. There's this. That is the Audubon. That gets you the fastest route to the best goal, the best outcome possible. Then there's this other road. We'll say that's like the 405 at like 2 o'clock. It's got some potholes. It's got you fucking up. You listen to most of what I say. You do most of the workout. You show up most of the time. You're doing most of the diet, but you got a little cheat thing going on that you're not telling me about. That's a road. You're going to get somewhere. It's not where we could have got. You're going to get somewhere. And it's going to take you longer than you thought. Then there's this other road, which is you're not really listening. I'm talking, but you're coming up with excuses in your head as to why what I'm saying isn't really the truth, and you're cheating your ass off. That is this like pothole strewn dirt road. That's where either you're going to get tired of me or I'm going to get tired of you, and one of us is going to come up with an excuse for this to not work out, and you're going to walk away going, he's a crappy trainer, and I'm just going to walk away and be like, he was full of shit from the get-go. So the most important first step is for you to get your head straight and decide what road you really want to be on. So I would say I don't really get people.
Sounds like for me, the 405, maybe just in the HOV lane, like a little faster than the traffic. But.
So then you better find your buddy that's serious and get him in the car because we're going to take the HOV lane. You need somebody to go with you. And I get that.
Thank you for sitting down. I appreciate it.
I appreciate the time. It's awesome.
Hey, Joe, I like your show. I tell everybody that's my shit. See, I had a long ride, turned the volume up high, and the time flew by so quick. I laughed out loud, that's what it's about. I really don't feel safe no more. And Joe stands out even in a big crowd, because he drinks till he hits the flow. Hey, Joe, it's time to stop the show. Pack it up and away we go.